He was right.
I was a former Fed. I was EPA.
Morning, Kelly.
I got my tattoo.
Good morning, all. This for Friday, October 18, 2019. This is a regular meeting of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission. It's dreary outside, so I guess it's just as well to be inside. We got lots of issues on our plate today. First item is the commissioner's discussion. I think Brad, you probably have.
No.
No?
No.
Anybody on the right? We're going to get to that in a minute, yeah.
This is Dave. You've got anything, Dave?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you.
Well, before we go to the meeting and minute approval, we have kind of a special event here for a dear advisor to us and someone that's helped the commissions ever since I've been.
As in D E A.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thank you very much for that. Also known as, some of them call him sweetheart. I'm not one of them. And the man has been a huge help to us, to me, for a long time. Now that his hair is starting to fade in more ways than one, he decided to retire on us, which is awkward, uncomfortable, but I understand fully, Bill. Bill, would you come up, please? We have something, and my dear colleague, Commissioner Thorburn, has something to give to you.
Alrighty.
And Bill, before, while she's coming around, there's no money in that.
Ah. Just this has to stand in, Bill. We really do appreciate our time with you and all of the assistance that you provide.
I mean, you're never short of words. So do you have any, I won't call them passing, do you have any departing comments that you'd like to share for a moment?
No, not particularly. I've worked with the commission for probably since the early 90s and been the main advisor to the commission, seen a number of changes in commissioners, seen different governors with different viewpoints. I think this group is really fun. I think you're a really mature commission. You have lots of different viewpoints, but I think you have a lot of respect in between people, and I think I'm really optimistic about your work and the director you've hired. I think it's a terrific hire, and I'm just very optimistic that everything's in great hands. And
well, Bill,
I'll be a user now.
Well, thank you, and just hope you'll come back and want to make public comment. And you know you won't get no more than 3 minutes. Bill, thank you.
Thank you.
We are now moving on to meeting minute approval.
Oh.
I'm looking at you.
Don't have the dates. Okay. So I move to approve the September 13th, 14th, 2019 minutes of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting as submitted.
I second that.
Commissioner Linville seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
And there's a second set, so I will move on those. I move to approve the Friday, September 27th, 2019, Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission conference call minutes as submitted.
Do we have a second?
I second.
Commissioner Baker seconds that.
And I will recuse. I was not on that call.
Likewise.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Motion carries. Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. We are now down to committee reports. I think Commissioner Mikhajic would like to lead off with the PRC discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Each of you at the table here in the front have been handed a paper copy of these draft minutes of the PRC meeting of October 1st. It was held in Salem, Oregon. And this will be on the website along with the other materials when it is finalized. And I'd also like to say thanks to the staff for all the good work preparing the materials and distributing them in advance of this the October 1st meeting. Yesterday at the Fish Committee, there was some discussion about the good intent to try to be clear on all the proceedings on this complicated matter on the Columbia River. So I'll just take maybe a little bit more time and go over these meeting summary notes because they do head toward a decision point of the commission that is possible to happen in December. So we did have some open public comment at this committee meeting like we've had a couple of meetings prior to that. There was also some written comment that was accepted at the time, and there's been some encouragement to submit written comment because occasionally when you get stuck with 3 minutes or 4 minutes in the case of this particular meeting, or 5 minutes even, it's not possible always for the folks in the public to get all the details that they would like the committee members to consider. And so we're trying to encourage written testimony. That was discussed a little bit at our Winthrop meeting as well. And there is now an open port so that written comment can be submitted and all the PRC members will have a chance to read it before the meeting of November 18th. So that port's open until November 14th to allow the staff time to put it together and make sure that we do get it in advance. And I'll get a little closer to the mic here. How about that? So as per the Joint State Policy Review Committee updates at our August and September meetings, the purpose of this October meeting again was to strive to make a recommendation to both commissions for 2020 and beyond that represents policy and regulatory concurrency between Washington and Oregon. The focus of the meeting was to try to narrow all of the alternatives that had been under discussion since last spring. And you'll see on here that we started with Summer Chinook and talked about the recreational and commercial allocation. The allocation options that were currently on the table are all going to remain as options in November. But there was also another one added asking the staff to look at an abundance-based approach that would allow for a greater share to the sport fishery during years of low abundance and a greater share to the commercial fishery during years of higher abundance in comparison to the 70-30 sharing that is the current committee recommendation. For allocation of unused commercial impacts, there was an alternative that was deactivated, and there was an alternative that was moved forward to November that would allow for unused commercial impacts to be allocated to either upriver sport fisheries or spawning escapement. With regard to allowable main stem gear in the summer Chinook period, there was an alternative calling for the use of alternative gear only that was deactivated from further analysis because it wasn't viewed as a viable option for a commercial fishery due to the lack of alternative gear options superior to a gillnet gear for the summer Chinook time frame. For fall Chinook, the committee discussed recreational and commercial allocation. There was an 80-20 split that was deactivated from further analysis on the basis of it not being viewed as able to maintain economic viability. The alternative for 6535 did not receive much discussion, but the group consensus was to keep that as an option available for discussion in November. For allowable mainstem commercial gear, the alternative that called for alternative gear only was deactivated due to the lack of any alternative gear options currently that provide a clear path for economic viability and low bycatch impacts in comparison to the current Gilnet gear. For COHO, or the allowable mainstem commercial gear issue was taken up, and the alternative to restrict the fishery to non-tangle net alternative gear only was deactivated. The committee did not view that as a feasible option based on the comparison of economic viability with other gear types. And for the alternative to limit the fishery to tangle net gear only was also deactivated. And the thinking there was to allow the flexibility for future Columbia River Compact decisions to choose the best commercial gear available depending on the circumstances at the time and all the species mix that's there. For spring Chinook, recreational and commercial allocation issue was discussed. And again, an abundance-based matrix was assigned to the staff to come up with the same intent that was in place for summer Chinook. So that would be some abundance-based matrix that would show a higher recreational share when the abundance is low and a higher commercial share when the abundance is high in comparison to the 70-30 that's the current committee recommendation. All the other allocation options remain on the table and active for November. For allowable mainstem gear for spring Chinook, the alternative to use tangle nets only during the post-update time frame was deactivated from further analysis because, once again, it was a matter of wanting to provide flexibility to managers to choose the best commercial gear option available at any time during the season that they feel is the best fit for the circumstances. Allocation of upriver spring Chinook within the recreational fishery issue. All alternatives were moved forward to November for additional discussion and possible decision-making there. Allocation of unused recreational impacts was a new issue that was raised, and it was added to the current range of alternatives for consideration in November. And that is, if the recreational fishery can't catch all their allocation because the river's muddy or for some other reason, then what should be done with those allocations that are still fish that are safe to catch relative to the standards of ESA and conservation goal achievement. There was a discussion of four policy topics that aren't related to gear types or allocation. That included a limitation on the sport fishery guide and charter licenses, commercial license buyback programs, hatchery and natural production goals, and increased alternative gear development and implementation. And the draft language that's available on the website for people to look at was all moved forward for consideration in November. I wanted to highlight one of these matters, the commercial fishery license buyback program. In the development of the language that was put forward to the PRC, there was quite a bit of discussion about a lot of different things. But in the end, there was only a two-sentence, very simple recommendation that is on the table that I'd like to read because the buyback situation is getting a lot of airtime in both states. And this is a recommendation from the committee that, if passed in November, would be put forward to both commissions. And it says, the commissions recognize that any effective program to buy back commercial fishery licenses would need to be implemented by both Oregon and Washington, that statutory changes may be required in one or both states, and that there are many difficulties in designing a concurrent and equitable program. A policy joint state body is to be convened to to develop a report on the necessities of an effective program that is submitted to each commission for their consideration and possible transmission to statutory authorities. So the essence of that is to recognize how complicated an issue it is and to have another group come up with a report that would then be submitted back to the Washington and Oregon commissions independently for their action. To finish the report here, the committee thought that it would be useful to include a fact sheet as an attachment to the draft policy document if one does come out of the November meeting in response to concerns about public misperception of various elements that could be misinterpreted to purpose and effect. And the writing work group will be trying to put a draft fact sheet together. In October, there was a brief period of time talking about future consideration of voluntary barbless hooks, which is the current PRC recommendation. But due to the new members on the committee on the Oregon side and on both state commissions, the committee requested that staff capture in writing the basis of the February recommendation and other relevant information that might be useful to both commissions in considering this. And that would include a summary of the scientific studies on fish mortality effects. There's been quite a few studies on barbed versus barbless hooks. The results of a technical advisory committee review asking for a credit to fisheries if barbless hooks were to be used, and that review declined to provide any credit. Origin of the mandatory barbless hook requirements and current policy, a brief description of that. The relevance of retention fisheries, or a comparison between the use of voluntary barbless hooks in a retention fishery as opposed to a 100% catch and release fishery, such as occurs in trout fishing areas. A brief paragraph on the barbless hook regulation status elsewhere in Oregon and Washington. And then the last one was a new one on the potential handle of wild B-run steelhead. Wild B-run steelhead are one of the most constraining stocks the last couple of years, and the staff has been asked to make a note from their creel censuses what proportion of the wild B-run steelhead run is intercepted by sport fisheries and actually handled, and then the difference between barbed or barbless fish mortality on that. So that's just an assignment in writing that could be relatively short, but I think it'll be an important piece of background for a lot of people. The future process and schedule includes one more meeting. This would be the eighth meeting, and I'll read from the process and schedule document that says for meeting number 8 in Ridgefield, Washington, that would start at 8 o'clock. The challenge is to consider the remaining technical analysis and possible policy language, to strive to finalize a recommendation to both commissions, and to consider future committee meetings if necessary, if there is not a recommendation coming out of the PRC, then to strive to look at scheduling some more meetings to try to get there. These would lead to consideration of the recommendation by the Oregon Commission on December 6th, where they have a meeting in Salem, Oregon, and by the Washington Commission, and our meeting is December 13th and 14th in Bellingham, Washington. So, it might be more appropriate to have a discussion about planning for our December meeting and what those issues are during future meeting planning, but I'd be happy to answer any questions on this report or that issue at this time.
No questions? Commissioner Thorburn.
One is kind of particular. On this issue of barbless hooks, it seemed to me that the Oregon commissioners were pretty firm on their support for sustaining Barbless Hook. So is this something that really has been agreed upon as the whole group, or?
Yeah, so here's a situation on that. So committee recommended to go to voluntary barbless hooks.
Yes.
And that was a motion or transmitted, that recommendation was transmitted to both commissions,
right.
And that's what we acted on in March. In Oregon, they have still yet to act on a permanent rule basis because they have a 45-day requirement that has been tangled up a couple different times that I understand is now solidly in place so that they will be able to consider it on December 3rd. However, as a temporary rule, they matched that, and for as of right now, for 2019, and has been the case since, I think, around the 1st of June, the concurrent regulation is for voluntary barbless hooks. During a regulatory simplification process agenda item at the Oregon Commission, where five of their seven members were attending, they took action on 2020 and beyond, and on a 3-2 vote, voted to go to mandatory barbless hooks in 2020. However, at that time, they did not review any of the basis for the PRC recommendation, and it was kind of an unexpected, it was quite unexpected. They have a new set of commissioners now than they did when they matched the Washington regulation, and so this is why this assignment is out there, so that the Oregon commissioners can understand the basis for the voluntary barbless hook regulation, the premier one, of course, being the scientific basis, all the scientific studies that have been done that show there is not any difference in fish mortality between barbed and barbless hook use. It's wound location that is the determinant of fish mortality. So that's the purpose of this. So when we get to the November committee meeting, there's a new set, two new members on the Oregon side of the table, and when they get to their commission, there's, I think, four or five new members. And so that's where the utility of having this in writing comes into play, and for our consideration as well.
So I at the risk of trying this out too much, I respectfully disagree that the key question is the science. The Columbia River is an extremely complex fishery. And looking at that, I'm sort of troubled by this bullet, relevance of retention fisheries as opposed to 100% catch and release fisheries. It couches it as either or. That is not the Columbia River. And it's just a very complicated issue. I don't think science is entirely the way that it needs to be answered. I just want to put that on the table.
Mr. Chairman, let me, that's a very good point, too.
I'm not sure this is the right time. There's a lot of interest in resolving this issue. I have my views. I'll be happy to state them at any time. But this is a committee report process, and I'll do whatever the commission wants to do. We can heat it up and talk about it now and solve it, or we can move on and do it.
I'm not intending to have us solve it. I just wanted to put the issue on the table because we have representatives on the commission who are serving on the PRC, and as it moves forward, I would just like that acknowledged as the PRC discusses it.
Okay.
And then the second, you know, I mean this as an observation. for our representatives as they move forward. It's very interesting to me that the topics that are being carefully considered here are about allocation. It highlights for me what I feel about this policy, and it is basically an allocation policy. Difficult discussions, as we've heard from constituents and discussed it among ourselves, it really is not a policy about conservation. There are a few elements in it, but conservation is directed in other ways than this policy. So just moving forward, I think that's an important, to me, that's an important principle.
We have at least three more committee reports, and we're way over time on an agenda that's quite deep today. Don, can you wrap this up, or do you have more to say on this?
Well, let me just say that yesterday some of the Columbia River policy matters came up in the Fish Committee, and there had been some discussion about confusion over the March meeting. The staff wasn't able to get the slide up from the motion in March, and I understand they're queued up to do so. But it would be relevant only to the extent that there's any current confusion at this moment about the motion that passed in March, or whether the white paper that was put out cleared that up. If there is any confusion about the motion that was made in March relative to 2020 and beyond, I think it would be good to put the motion up and make sure that anyone who still is not sure about that get that kind of clarity.
Don, believe that there was definitely confusion at the time of the vote in Spokane, without a doubt. If there's any now, I couldn't speak to that. I guess the other commissioners can if they have any thoughts on it. But I was more concerned about, my comments yesterday were based on the event that took place in Spokane on that Saturday.
Commissioner Baker. Chairman Carpenter?
Yes, Commissioner Graybill, please.
I'll be brief, Larry. I was in attendance at the meeting and as a representative on the PRC. And I just...
If you're going to allow some sort of debate on this, I think at least some sort of little response to a couple of portions of that aren't really aren't really factual of what we just heard.
We're not going to do that today. I'm going to let Commissioner Baker speak, then I'm going to end this discussion. It will be on our agenda in Bellingham mid-December with amount of time required to cover what we need to cover from all perspectives. Is there any objection from the commissioners on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I object. If we're going to hear something like there's been barbless hooks for decades when it started in 2012, and people leave the meeting believing that that's true, that would not be a very good process.
Well, Commissioner Baker.
As one of
I'll give you a chance if I get it done here.
As one of the people who is new to fishing and one of the people who was confused in March, I just like to say that I appreciate the PRC. I appreciate the time and energy that all of you are putting into this. My personal objective is concurrency, and I look forward in December to hearing discussion back and forth on all of these issues, and I don't think any of us are leaving believing this or that. I think that a real and a long discussion on this is in order. The point I want to make, there's two points. One is I'm good with having that discussion in December, and we will have the PRC recommendations at that time. What I'm pretty seriously not good with is making even the thought of making any decisions on this in December, which kind of brings us to the Groundhog Day of, well, okay, if not then, when? But we have to have public input on this, and we have to learn from some mistakes that we've made in the past, which is to have them in places that where the bulk of people who really care about these issues can get to easily, and that is not Bellingham. So I want to make it, that's my big point on that we have these, we do this in Bellingham, we get it all out on the table, and we go from there, but I'm not sure what the schedule is from going from there. The other thing that caught my eye in the written comments, which I hadn't seen before, and I just wanted to ask the question, it said in conclusory matters, this is what's going to be in front of us in Bellingham. It says that the writing group will consist of select commissioners and staff. To me, that seems unusual. Usually, the staff develop these proposals after all of the analysis and discussion and present them to us. And I just like to ask the question of why commissioners would be involved in writing those proposals, and if so, who's doing the selecting? That's my question. I don't know if that's okay to be answered.
Well, that's fine. You wanted to respond, and then I have a closing statement on this issue.
Well, with regard to the matter of whether or not it's taken up for a decision in December or not, I think that'd be a good discussion on the pros and cons of that at our future meeting planning agenda segment tomorrow. There are some pros and cons to both sides of that, and there are some uncertainties, particularly in the event that the PRC does not advance any recommendation that I think settles part of it. And so on the matter of the small writing group that's developing policy language like those four topics that I alluded to, a lot of that is balancing the analytical staff who's doing the analysis of the alternatives compared to some higher level policy people, Chris Kern in Oregon and Ron Warren in Washington, and one commissioner from each side. That was basically done as a workload balancing matter. All of that language, though, does come before the committee, the full committee, and the staff for discussion at the meetings.
Okay. Are there any other comments from the front table here? Okay, Nikki, I want to, unless there's any objection, I'd like to put, what do my colleagues think, an hour and a half on the agenda in Bellingham for this item? Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to take it up tomorrow. This is a contentious topic, and we've just spent enough time right now touching on it. I think the portion of our December meeting where we have commissioner dialogue would be very important. I think an hour for commissioner dialogue is in order. So this is one of these issues where when it gets shorted at the front table, there's these ramifications of confusion that are not good for our process. And so I would say let's hold off until we see what's on the screen for December. But in terms of doing this matter justice, we first have to decide whether or not a decision should be made in December. And if that is true, I don't think an hour and a half is sufficient because there should be public testimony. We've always had public testimony when there's been a matter like this. And just the portion of discussion at the front table, in my mind, could take an hour and a half.
Fair enough. I do not think, I do not intend to push for a decision in December. I think it's grossly inappropriate based on the importance of this. And I do agree that we have to go, I think we have to go out of the area. I'm going to propose for consideration by the commission that we have a meeting. We'll open a public comment on this issue in the Tri-Cities and one in Vancouver, Washington. So. Any other discussion?
So we'll take that up tomorrow afternoon then.
I just brought it on the table now. We can talk about it tomorrow, but that's the plan. All right. We have three other committee reports. Four? We'll skip lunch today. That'll be fine. All right. Whichever one of you ladies wants to start, go ahead.
This is in the discussion of taking very, very big, important committee meetings and reducing them to an amount of time that keeps us back on track. I'm going to go through this quickly, but this is a big deal. This is the big tent committee. We met yesterday on strategic planning and then on our 2020 agenda. The strategic planning process is the one I want to talk about. What we did yesterday, I also appreciate that every commissioner who was in town attended this meeting, as well as some public. What we've done with our open committee meetings is essentially add another half day to our commission meetings. This is important. It's also long and a lot of work for all of us. So I'd just like to appreciate the commissioners that attended, and Kelly and Amy, who were also there, and our staff, which is Jeff Davis and Nate Pamplin. So what we did yesterday is we went through the beginning of the strategic planning process, including laying out the process, which will evolve, but essentially our part in it is a small part of a much bigger effort that will get the same kind of input that we tried to provide yesterday from internally from committee or from agency staff and employees, externally from both our traditional stakeholders, and then from others that we would like to become relevant to, which is everyone else in the state who appreciates natural resources. So this is going to be a big deal, and how we fold it together in the end will be an interesting process. But the end date for getting a new strategic plan completely whole cloth, new and relevant, and not just an ornament for somebody's shelf, is June of 2020. So what we did, I'm not going to go through these, but what we did yesterday is the commissioners that were there, we went around the table and talked about, number one, what is our primary value? What do we believe that we are here for and that this agency is here for? Lots. We got A through L of comments on that. We then went to the mission statement, which is also it's a mandate mission. The problem with this is that lots of different words are used. Same thing, did a round circle on that. And we thought we would get to, once we got through values and mandate, we would get to goals. We didn't get to goals because we ran out of time sort of predictably. So that will be something that we will take up at our next meeting. At some point, we're going to have to schedule time to go through the meat of what we did as well as the process, but we don't have that today. So that is where we ended our strategic planning process. Anybody who would like more, talk to one of us at a break, if we have any breaks. The second thing we did we finalized our recommendation to the commission on the 2020 calendar. And I want to make the point that at an earlier meeting, because we decided kind of importantly that we get our best input on issues that are relevant to certain geographic areas when we're in that geographic area. We decided to flip it. In the past, we've done five meetings in Olympia and four out in the field somewhere. We flipped it, and we're going to do five out and four in. So then we've got this complicated analysis of, okay, well, what are we going to be doing in this month, and where should we do it, and how can we save money by not having staff, and how can we get enough public input? So here's our recommendation. I think you've all seen the past recommendation. I don't have it written down for you again, but the changes that we made to that, we're still doing five out. The July 30th through August 1st meeting, we are going to do in Aberdeen rather than Ocean Shores, in part because we think Aberdeen kind of needs our money more than Ocean Shores, but that was the analysis there. We're going to do the September 10th meeting in Olympia rather than Colville. We are going to change the date of the October meeting. Instead of the 15th through the 17th, it'll be the 22nd through the 24th. That one will be in Colville. And the December 3rd meeting will be in Everett instead of Mount Vernon. So that's our recommendations. And we do need to finalize this at some point this meeting. We don't need to do it now during committee reports. But before we break tomorrow, I'll be making a motion that we finalize this agenda. So that's what we did yesterday in Big Tent.
Very good. Commissioner Thorburn?
So I have two committees that I'll be reporting on. Yesterday, we had the Wolf Committee meeting, and as Commissioner Baker noted, I would like to comment that we had good attendance, staff representation, all the committee members plus additional commissioners, as well as public attendance. And thank everyone who came. We had several items on the agenda. Currently, I think there's pretty good awareness that we're starting the process using the SEPA process for post-recovery planning. And we're currently in an extended scoping phase of that, which is the first phase of planning, in which we try to capture all of the issues that our public wants to see considered during the planning process. There are a number of ways that public can give input. Webinars have been conducted, and they're also there's a survey on the web, as well as we're receiving open comment both through written letters and electronically. There's been a considerable participation. As I mentioned, we are having an extended period beyond the basic requirements of the State Environmental Planning Act requirement, so we're having a longer than usual scoping period, and we've got 2 weeks left. We talked about some ways of ensuring that that people are having the opportunity to comment and how we might do some additional outreach during the final 2 weeks. We had a summary of the input to date. There are themes that are appearing, and that's kind of what's used to approach the next phase, which will be developing alternatives in the plan. There is an interagency Wolf Committee that exists because Wolf policy and management certainly overlaps a number of governmental agencies, public landowners like the Forest Service and national parks. the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because wolves in the western two-thirds of the state continue to be listed federally, and tribes who are actually managing wolves currently on their tribal lands as well as ceded lands. So there is a need as we go through this planning process to include all of these agencies in the discussion. This committee has been in existence. It's kind of being reinvigorated by this process, and we got an update on what's going on. We spent a short time on the on-the-ground activities with wolf management right now. Grazing season is still active. It is wrapping up, and certainly during grazing season is when there's a lot of attention on wolf management currently. The final thing that we discussed was there's been a lot of attention given right now to problem areas of our wolf management. And we had a robust discussion among the committee members and other commissioners about our concerns that it has not been recognized in this current sort of upheaval that recovery of wolves in Washington has been highly successful. It's been collaborative. We've heard the voices of all of the stakeholders, incorporated them into our recovery activities, and the trajectory of recovery has been very positive. I think all agreed that it's important that we would like to see that emphasized and recognized. The department is going to be meeting with the governor on December 1st to talk about these activities. And I think it was the feeling of the committee that we wanted it to have. We wanted to have the director and his staff feel the support of the, at least the commissioners who were there, in terms of all of the positive things that have happened with wolf recovery. So that was a real robust discussion, and I'll break to see if anybody who participated in that wants to disagree with or add anything to that.
That was my first attendance in the Wolf Committee, and it was very enlightening, and I thought the discussion was healthy and positive, and many of us complimented the staff, and I think very justifiably so.
Okay. So I will then, with that, move on to the Wildlife Committee meeting that happened this morning before this meeting. Again, was well attended. All of the committee members, another commissioner, staff, members of the public, again, extend my gratitude for the participation and attendance, and really robust discussions that happened on topics that are before us in wildlife. The first discussion was a topic that's on the agenda for tomorrow, which is cougar management. This is something that the commission has asked for, really coming out of a lot of concerns about public safety that we heard in our March meeting in Spokane, we are going to have, as I said, a presentation tomorrow, so I won't go into great detail, but we did have a healthy discussion among the committee members this morning, and I recognize that cougar management is extremely complicated. There are really kind of two facets of it that interlink. There's the public safety concerns of a keystone predator, and there's harvest management, which has to do with conservation and population management and opportunity. They are interlinked, and our discussion this morning was talking about the two distinctions as well as how they're interlinked and how we might look at decisions going forward. We also had a good discussion about the lands acquisition process that the department has. We sort of reviewed that process, some changes that have been made in terms of acquisition and particularly ongoing management of our lands, and had an opportunity to raise some of the concerns about department ownership of lands. This is a topic that I think will stay before the committee because it is quite complicated. Then our final discussion, we didn't have anything controversial to talk about. So we decided to talk about hunting contests, particularly around the issue of coyote derbies, which generally have prizes linked to them, and the prizes are related to a numeric take, and there has been growing concern about these kinds of contests and what they have to do with fair tastes and hunting ethics and what they're sort of modeling, as well as problems for landowners that can result from these contests. We feel that this is, I'll just back up and say there actually is a law around hunting contests, and we have regulations to carry out that law. So we feel on the committee that this is an issue that we would like to bring forward to the full commission with a briefing about the current status and things that other states are doing around this issue and perhaps some alternatives in terms of our regulations. If the commission is in agreement with that, we'll ask staff to bring this forward at some
point.
Sounds
like a good idea. Any objections from the front table? No? Hearing none, okay.
Okay, that concludes my report.
Mr. Baker had a comment.
The only thing I'd like to add, which was not discussed in the meeting itself, is normally when staff brief us on things, if there is a staff recommendation, that's valuable. And so if nobody objects, if we could tack that on to the briefing and the options. I'd like to hear what they think.
Great.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be real brief. Schedule, some of which we've already talked about. The Fish Committee met yesterday as well, and we covered three items, one of which is we're going to have a briefing tomorrow from staff, item number 14. I'll just read it. Implementation of House Bill 1579 and Freshwater Game Fish Rule Housekeeping. This is a briefing and public hearing. What it says is the staff will provide the commission a briefing on rules liberalizing bag limits for walleye, bass, channel catfish, and freshwater game fish in order to reduce the predation on salmon smolts. So any of you that want to come in and participate and weigh in on public hearing side, please do so. So we had that item. The other item that that we discussed was Willapa Bay and some of the management issues there. Unfortunately, this year we have a significant shortfall in returning adult Chinook as it relates to the egg take needs for the different hatcheries in that basin. And we've got work to do on that, and that I really don't have any more to say about that at the moment. We're hoping this recent rain and copious amounts of rain might bring some last-minute fish in, but it's getting pretty late right now. The last item, very briefly, is we had a discussion about the March Spokane motion process and what we might do to make that clear and reduce any frustration in the future. We talked about that. Commissioner McIsaac talked about it. I think it was a good discussion as well. That's all I have. Does anybody else have any follow-up on that? Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One matter on the Willapa Bay discussion at the Fish Committee yesterday. Staff noticed us that the comprehensive review delivery schedule was going to be delayed to perhaps next June. And the matter of whether or not our schedule ought to have something in February or January-February time frame relative to any guidance to deviate from the plan, if the staff feels there's a pickle, as there has been the past couple of years, was something that perhaps ought to be considered by the full commission here when we get tomorrow to future agenda planning. There was also linkage to the egg take at Forks Creek Hatchery, and some of the folks have been advocating that when the comprehensive review is over and the commission considers new language for the Willapa Bay, that it might have something different than a $350,000 release at North Fork. And because of this delay till next June, whatever the current plan says would prevail as policy from the commission. And so it may be that it would be wise for the commission to also put that in the January and February time frame on whether or not to preserve options for a differential release situation at Forks Creek Hatchery, or on the other hand, to stick to the language of the program and keep it at 350. So that's something that maybe we can bring up tomorrow under future agenda planning.
Bring that up. I think that in addition to what Commissioner McIsaac said, we're also going to have a Fish Committee conference call this week to try and drill down on with staff and learn more about some of the Willapa Bay options, and we'll report back to the full commission on that at a later time. Any other comments from the front table? Okay. Thank you all. Thank you, public, for your patience going through the details. We are now at a